is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
That's right, it is the Lombardi Line, live on VSiN, YouTube TV, iHeartRadio, and the iHeartRadio app. Big show coming up. It's roster cutdown day in the NFL. What this week means for us as bettors, plus some QB competitions to get sorted out. And a great guest list joining us today as well. We'll have a pair of VSiN betting analysts coming up at 1:30 Eastern. VSiN's own Will Hill hosts the Should Have Bet More podcast. He will stop by, as will Zachary Cohen, VSiN.com senior editor. Both making an impact in the latest VSiN NFL betting guide refresh. We'll dive into a lot of those updated bets. Such a great thing, by the way, Michael, that we do here at VSiN, where in addition to the original NFL betting guide that we put out earlier in the offseason, after the preseason comes to a close, we've got injuries to update, all of these things. We put another one out there for the people.
Yeah, we're constantly trying to update it, which is wonderful. And I think we've proven that in college football that, you know, we were on top of it with Georgia Tech. I think we were on top of it, the college aspect. All Steve McAdam, Matt Eumanns, Adam Burke, everybody who writes for the guy does an incredible job in terms of getting up-to-date information that's not necessarily mainstream in terms of what everybody's thinking. So it's really important, and especially week one, where, you know, you don't know a lot about these NFL teams, and you certainly don't know a lot about the colleges because we don't even get an injury report out of college. So really important. But I thought the most important thing of the day was watching you go hiking on that video. I thought that was tremendous.
You're too funny. Yes. Yeah, so last night, episode 2 of the Circa Survivor Quest to 9.2 million came out. I unfortunately was out of Survivor last year early, so I am out of the show early as well. But we went through my experience a little bit, and the camera crew came with me on a hike at a mountain by my house. Well, Michael, they asked me what I like to do as activities. And I said, you guys don't understand. I have no life. I watch sports all day. They said, well, what else do you do? Sometimes I go hike this mountain by my house. So that's where we went. But it was fun. It was great. Yeah, I hope everybody checked out episode 2.
It was good. And I thought Mike Palm dropped the greatest nugget of all on the show. And when he said that 2 years ago, 73% of the people who enrolled were out after week three, mm-hmm. and 74% were out after week three last year. So really it's about, you know, all this nonsense about saving this team and saving that team. I think you throw it out the window. The key is to stay alive, yeah, and to get to Thanksgiving. That's the key. Once you get to Thanksgiving, you got a better chance because some teams will give up, some teams will be playing hard, and you have a better landscape over the league. But I think to me, when 75% almost of the contest is out by week three, that means they're playing too cute.
It is such a balancing act because you have to get there, to your point. You have to get to Thanksgiving if you want a chance, but you also have to have a team that's available to play on Thanksgiving if you want to go beyond that. So it's definitely a high wire balancing act when it comes to the types of teams that you're picking and when, but just getting past, you know, that early flurry of games and the mass exodus and carnage that we've seen in the contest is so difficult. But again, episode 2 out last night, you can rewatch it on YouTube, on VSiN's X platform as well. The remaining episodes of the 5-part docuseries will be coming soon. But as I said off the top, Michael, it's roster cutdown day by 4 p.m. Eastern today. These rosters that have upwards of 90 players on them have to be cut down to the final 53. And as a former NFL general manager, like, what is this day like around the building out there?
Well, you know, it's a little bit sad because you're going to talk to some young men, you're telling them they're not going to make the team, although it's not as bad as it appears because there's a lot of jobs that are available, practice squad jobs that pay really well, and you can continue your career moving forward. So that's a good part. So you have some good news. It's not all bad news. The other part of today is about how are we going to improve the bottom half of our roster? You know, are we sure Nick Mullins should be the backup to Sam Darnold, or would be better off signing Mike White? That's the conversation that's going on. And we'll see some trades that'll happen between now and 4 o'clock Eastern that look like, why would they trade for that guy? Well, they're trading because they want to avoid the waiver wire. You know, they want to be able to say, okay, we don't want that guy to go through. Last night we saw Malik Willis get traded to Green Bay for a seventh pick, round pick, probably conditional. Well, you know, Green Bay probably felt like, look, we're picking, you know, we have the 24th claiming. Some team will claim him. It makes sense for us just to give up a draft pick on an if basis to see if we can get him as the backup instead of Sean Clifford, who did not play well this summer. So I think there's a lot of that. It's the bottom half of the roster, and then we still have certain holdouts with Mr. Riddick in New York. What's going on out there in the West Coast? We won't mention that. And then I think there'll be more contract extensions going on.
You know, I heard Bill Belichick talking yesterday on the Pat McAfee show too, Michael, about, you know, certain elements and people that you want on the team when it comes to the financial part too, where there's a veteran that you might want, but if you have him on the active day roster, then you have to pay his guaranteed salary for the entire year and kind of working through that element of it as well.
Yeah, well, what happens is when you have a veteran, what we call vested veterans, that means they've had 4 years of service in the National Football League. If they are on your roster at 4 o'clock Saturday before the opening game, and for Baltimore and Green Bay and Philadelphia and Kansas City, that would be 4 o'clock on Wednesday. If they're on those teams at 4 o'clock, their salary for the remainder of the year is guaranteed. Now, today, Cleveland said, we're not trading Dorian Thompson-Robinson. We're going to keep him. So we may trade Huntley or Winston. Please call. Well, Huntley and Winston are both vested veterans. So that means if they carry them on their roster, they owe them the entire year's salary. Mm. So maybe they would get rid of those guys. So that's what happens is a lot of vested veterans will get cut. And you'll say, why'd they cut that guy? Well, they're probably going to sign him back, but it may not be until Monday after the first game. And then if you do that on Monday after the first game, it's a week-to-week salary on your salary cap. It's not fully guaranteed.
So salary cap gymnastics, cuts, trades, a lot that's going to be going on today before we hit that 4 p.m. Eastern cutoff date. And so, Michael, we talked about the NFL betting guide, the re-release that's coming out today. A big theme of this is taking into account things that we've seen in the preseason or things that we have learned about teams from an injury standpoint, from a personnel standpoint, that have potentially changed our view on some teams and made us want to add to the portfolio. I have a few bets that we'll get into. We'll get into mine in a moment. But just from your standpoint, as you watch the last month or so unfold, is there a hypothetical bet that you would like to add to the portfolio or a team that you became more interested or less interested in backing this season?
Well, I definitely got in more. I thought Cincinnati's had a better training camp than they've had in the past. I think they've took it seriously. I think Burrow's going to be up on the bit. You know, their backups held their own against Chicago. Their backups held their own in the final preseason game. You know, when Indianapolis was trying to move the ball against them and they held in there. So I like them. I thought that they were really good. I think, you know, when you look at Seattle or you look at the Rams, there's some pieces you like about their team. You're just not sure how it's all going to come together, right? Same thing with Miami, you know, with Chubb not coming off a PUP, Phillips not being 100%. Who knows? I was not impressed with the Patriots. I think they're headed for a bad year. I wasn't impressed with the Giants this summer either.
Well, that leads me to one of the bets that I did, or I guess technically two of the bets that I added. I bet both the Patriots and the Giants to be the lowest scoring team. If one of them ends up being the lowest scoring team, it's going to be profitable. Patriots are a favorite, but at plus 320, the Giants were available at 10-1. And these are two teams, Michael, that the more I look at their rosters, the more I have watched things unfold with them, I just have little to no faith in, especially on the offensive side. Their odds are the same when it comes to the worst record in the NFL. But I just wanted to take wins and losses out of it, exclusively fade these offenses who, going through the numbers even last year, both of these teams were bottom three in the NFL points per game, offensive EPA, yards per play. The Patriots tied the Panthers as the league's worst offensive unit overall. We know they're devoid of talent in the skill positions. We know they have experimented and not had any success with the offensive line combinations they put up through camp. Tom Curran, who covers the team, we've had him on the show, called the offensive line embarrassingly inadequate. And they play one of the most difficult schedules in the National Football League from top to bottom. The Giants, also another team I have no faith in. I have no faith in Daniel Jones, as I wrote about in another bet in the early release guide of taking him under 16.5 touchdowns. The Giants were more productive scoring with Tyrod Taylor and Tommy DeVito last year than they were with Daniel Jones under center. And I don't even think even the addition of Malik Nabers is going to make that better. They can try to make the O-line better, but I highly doubt that that'll be an area where we see improvement. Plus, let us not forget their best offensive weapon in Saquon Barkley isn't there anymore, and he's on a division rival. The other bet that I added, which, Michael, you kind of talked me into a little bit, is the Broncos. And I bet not only them over 5.5 wins at minus 130, but I also took a plus money price on the alt over 6.5 wins at plus 160. The note that you pointed out a number of times, this team was 0-6 when they turned the ball over two times or more last season, 8-3 in games they had one or no turnovers. And you think about Bo Nix being the most efficient quarterback in all of college football last year at 51 total touchdowns, 3 interceptions, in addition to unbelievable completion percentage. Sean Payton has his guy. He's going to protect the football. He's going to get the ball out to the people it needs to. I think that could be the missing piece for this offense to do what it's needed to. Don't have a ton of faith in the defense, so that could be a problem here. But I didn't hate the over alternate wins as well. I think they could get 7 this year.
I do too. And I think, look, they've got to play better against the Raiders, who they've struggled. They're 1-9 against the Raiders. And if they can win one of those games, last year they didn't. Last year they didn't beat Washington. They didn't beat the Raiders, nor did they beat New England. Those are three games they could have easily won. They didn't. So year two of the program will certainly mean expectations will be improved and the talent level of the team is improved. And here's what I think the biggest factor is too. The team buys into Bo Nix, right? There's no more, is Russ cooking? Who's Russ? Does Russ want to stay? Nobody's talking about Bo Nix's contract. Nobody's talking about the trade that was made. You know, everybody's just talking about the Denver Broncos and how they have to prepare for Seattle.
And as I was just ripping offensive lines for the Patriots and Giants, I think the Broncos probably have a little bit of an underrated offensive line.
They do. They're better. They're better. Oh, the Broncos offensive line is much better than New England, much better than the Giants. This is what I put them in the top 10 lines. I mean, they've got two good tackles.
We have a lot of O-line talk today, including next block. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise.
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
Let's do it, and we're going to start out there in New England, where Patriots head coach Gerard Mayo is expected to make a decision on his quarterback situation this week. Rookie quarterback, number 3 overall pick, Drake May, said yesterday, if called upon, he would feel ready to start week 1. News or noise, Michael?
Well, I think it's news because he's basically saying he's ready to go, but we all know that he's not. I mean, let's not overreact to preseason, please. I mean, look, Sam Ellinger is the all-star of preseason. He's great. Colt McCoy will be in the booth, is now one of the greatest quarterbacks in preseason. It takes some time. I think until they get this offensive line settled, Drake May should be standing next to Mayo.
So I'm going to go down this line a little bit further with you, Michael. I mentioned a quote from Tom Curran in a recent conversation that he had. He also said specifically on Drake May, you can't screw him up when he's on the sideline watching and learning. You can screw him up if he plays. And I think the offensive line clearly is what's going to win Jacoby Brissett the job out there in New England. Let's just look at this last preseason game to sum up exactly what we're talking about here. They had 6 penalties through the first quarter and a half, with all 5 offensive linemen committing at least one, all against Washington's backup defensive line, mind you. 10 penalties overall, center involved in 2 botched snaps, 2 tackles, had 4 illegal formations, left guard holding, he leaves the game with injury. The guy who steps in for him immediately has another holding penalty. Rookie guard has a false start and a holding call and gave up a sack for the injury that ultimately led to Brissett's shoulder problem there. Like, if that doesn't sum up what we're looking at here, I don't know what does.
Yeah, I don't know either. And I mean, this is, and you know, of course, Mayo's going to say, well, I have nothing to do with the offense. I made Alex Van Pelt the head coach of the offense. Well, I mean, like, who's coaching the team? Like, some of these are not just, you know, young players or bad players. This is also, did we practice? Are we drilling? You know, you can be a young player and still not make mistakes. So I'm with you. This is not pretty. And we know one thing from last year. not pretty in preseason means ugly in regular season.
I mean, you even had the officials roasting you. Sean Hockley hit him with the illegal formation, sigh, again, left tackle, number 77. Like, that's when you know it's bad. Patriots, you know, by the way, open the season in Cincinnati. They're a 9-point underdog, but that number continues to creep, total 42. Let's stick with the Patriots, though, because a change for the Pro Football's Hall of Fame eligibility rules could expedite entry for a couple of legends, including Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll, who could be eligible for the Hall, Michael, as soon as 2026. News or noise?
I think it's news, and I like the fact that coaches don't have to wait, assuming they don't retire. But here's what I would say for all the people that think Pete Carroll's not a Hall of Fame coach. Do some homework, because the criteria that I set in my book, Football Done Right, for a head coach, Pete Carroll matches that criteria. Clearly, he's won a Super Bowl. Look, well, he only won one. Okay, well, George Allen didn't win any, and he's in. Neither did Marv Levy. He's in. So there has to be a criteria based on win percentage, based on longevity, based on playoff experience, based on getting to the playoff, based on winning Super Bowls. And Pete meets all that. I mean, Belichick's a slam dunk. Only an idiot would say he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame because Tom Brady's not going with him.
Well, he wasn't even on the top three of certain teams.
Well, yeah, he wasn't on the coaches. You know, don't get me started.
Sorry.
Now, he wasn't on the top three of Atlanta. But let's just make something very clear today. I want to make an announcement. That wonderful Super Bowl winning organization, the Atlanta Falcons, who picked Desmond Ridder to be their starting quarterback last year, just got cut by the Arizona Cardinals.
Michael, listen, Tuesdays are slow. I got to get you riled up every now and then.
Oh, my God. I mean, that just, when I saw that, can you imagine? You know, we don't want Lamar Jackson. We have Desmond Ridder.
We're so good.
Just got cut by the Cardinals. Clayton Tune beat him out.
Oh, Lord. Yes. Houston, baby. Hey, he did have to deal with Dana Holgerson for a number of years, so he deserves some good things. Give it up for Clayton. But because you mentioned Desmond Ridder, saw this tweet from The Athletic's Dane Brugler. The 9 quarterbacks drafted in the 2022 NFL draft, only 2 are still with the team that drafted them. One of them being Brock Purdy, who was a 7th-round pick. The other also a 7th-rounder in Skylar Thompson. Which, let's go to that draft class here, shall we? Because Malik Willis, you mentioned this off the top, has been traded from the Titans to the Packers in exchange for a 7th-round pick. Is this news or noise that GM Brian Gutekunst clearly not impressed with his drafted backups?
No question. I mean, Michael Pratt, the young kid from Tulane, probably they were counting on him. He was always going to be the third. But this is a knock on Sean Clifford, the 5th-round pick from a year ago, who, remember, last summer was the darling of training camp. I think Elliot had him on our all-fantasy, all-training camp team, you know, and we're like, wait a minute, I watched every Penn State game. He's not good. You know, he wasn't very good. And in fairness to Sean Clifford, he played way better in the Packer preseason than I thought he ever played for Penn State. So I'll give him that. But to me, no, I mean, look, remember when Malik Willis was rumored to be a first top 10 pick by the draft picks? Huh?
Oh, yeah.
Remember how much indignation there was that he didn't go until the 3rd round? Remember that?
Who could forget? But yes, Elliot, the preseason all-stars, we love them. This next one, Michael, despite a lot of popularity in the locker room, a guy who has worked his way back from multiple significant injuries, the Broncos are planning to move on, it appears, from veteran wide receiver Tim Patrick today. They're exploring trade offers, but if no deal is finalized before that 4 p.m. Eastern time cutoff date, they plan on releasing him. News or noise?
I mean, I think it is news because I feel bad for Tim Patrick. He never was an elite athlete in terms of speed and explosiveness. He had great hands, but injuries tend to take whatever you have in terms of your speed, your burst, your ability to win at the top of the route away from you. And unfortunately, that's what's happened. I don't think some team will trade for him. I think he's one of these players that will be on an airplane soon to go in and work out, where people want to look at him and see, test his health and see actually what does he have athletically left.
Patrick missed 2022 with a torn ACL and last season with a torn Achilles. Both of those injuries suffered in preseason camp. Let's go to college football, where Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney is apparently no longer taking calls on his recent radio show, with Clemson saying this is not because of last year's famous Tyler from Spartanburg rant. Agree to disagree. Yeah. News or noise, Michael?
Well, I think it's news, but we're seeing a lot of people won't take questions from media. I mean, unbelievable. It's all over.
Dion.
place. I'm not going down that road, but it's all over the place. Nobody wants to take questions. You and I have to take them every day, right? But nobody wants to take questions. I mean, look, he's going to I think Debo's going to have to defend himself. And if he loses by two touchdowns or more, you know, he's going to have to change what he wants to do. I know he doesn't like the transfer portal. I know he likes homegrown talent. But when your competitors are beating you, doing something different than you're doing, you're going to have to adapt or change. As the old saying goes, if you don't like change, you're going to like irrelevance even less. And if he doesn't beat Georgia or get close to Georgia, and he has another three-loss season, which is very probable, you know, people are going to wonder, are we sure he's to the right by not doing this?
No doubt about it. They're a 13.5-point underdog in that season opener against Georgia, that game in Atlanta at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Also, for the record, he says he will accept vetted questions via text or email to the host. So there's that. Mark Mask of the Washington Post wrote yesterday, his sources say the NFL, Michael, will not utilize their laser electronic technology system. They tested in the preseason to measure first downs. The system will go into effect next year at its earliest. News or noise?
Well, I think it's probably, it's definitely news, but I wonder why in the age where we can put a man on the moon and we can do all the things that we have to do, where somebody sitting in Bangladesh can get into my computer in Ocean City, that we can't figure out how the hell we get a first down, right? Oh, I want to get into your computer. Sure, just hit this button and you're in. Where are you? Oh, I'm in Bangladesh, but we can't figure out 10 yards on a first down. Come on, please.
Also, we're watching too much NFL for me just to automatically know, looking at this profile of a man, that it's Bill Vinovich. So there we go. Regardless, FYI, everybody, the chain, even when this does get instituted, the chain gang will still exist as a backup system. You still need a first down marker if you're the player. So that, there's that. One more here, Michael. Two-time MVP Lamar Jackson is not considered a top-tier quarterback after Mike Sando's annual coach executive survey that came out yesterday. He's in tier two.
Well, I mean, look, I think who's ahead of him? I didn't look at Sando's list. I never look at these executive lists because they always have a grudge to them. So I don't know who's in it. But
it's
to me,
Mahomes, Burrow, and Josh Allen.
They're the only three there?
Yep.
You know, I thought maybe you put five in there. I mean, I would say he's not better than any one of those three. I would agree with that. However, he would be four. I don't know how you separate the line of demarcation. I mean, all those quarterbacks, with the exception of Allen, have gotten to the Super Bowl. Allen, 15 rushing touchdowns, has been so close. A missed field goal kept them from going to overtime. Might have won it. Might have won the Super Bowl this year had they made that kick.
Yeah, I feel like it all comes down to the element of taking over a game in the playoffs, which he hasn't done yet. I feel like that's, if you're looking for a line of demarcation, that would have to be it. But considering Josh Allen's a no-time MVP, seeing a two-time MVP below him in terms of tiers seems a little messed up. When we return on the Lombardi Line, the one and only Will Hill will join us. We'll continue talking all things NFL futures. Don't go anywhere. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sure, we love talking quarterbacks and flashy skill position players, but it is time, Michael Lombardi, to give the big men some love. We're going to continue our offensive line theme that we have had on the show today, diving into your blue chip and red chip top offensive line units in the National Football League. Spoiler alert, the Patriots, Giants, and Panthers aren't on it. But I think, like, that leads to a good conversation, right, about the yin and yang, and for us as bettors, teams with good offensive lines and bad ones, and how to approach them as the season goes on.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's go back to the day when the Cincinnati Bengals, who really had one of the worst lines in football, decided to take Ja'Marr Chase over Penei Sewell. Everybody applauded the deal, and look, Chase is a great player. But Penei Sewell has made Detroit a very, very good team, along with Frank Ragnow and, of course, Taylor Decker, who they already had. So that's the best offensive line in football, and we lose sight of it. We start thinking about all these skill players. You know, Chicago's great skill. Do they have enough offensive linemen? I think the Rams have learned that through Stafford. We have the Rams as a red chip offensive line. So let me give you some background here, Stormy. Typically on the GM shuffle, we would always pick the top 10 tackles, the top 10 guards, the top 10 centers. I said, you know what? That's probably not the right thing to do, because you could have San Francisco. You could have the top left tackle in football, but not have a great line,
right?
Which is what San Francisco does. So it's kind of misleading. So we just categorized the lines and put them into one section. And I think ultimately that's really proved to be the case. Whereas, look, the red chip offensive line, you know, Green Bay's very good at pass protection, not a great run blocking. I think Denver, one of the reasons I do like Denver is their line is good. Look, McGlinchey's overpaid at right tackle, and Bowles tends to hold too much at left tackle, but they're good. And they have a very good guard inside people. I know they'll miss Lloyd Cushenberry, who was their center last year, but Sean has always valued having a great offensive line. And I think Sean McVay at the Rams has decided to take a better approach. He put a lot of money into both those linemen. So, look, bad lines don't travel. And when you have a line like the Giants have, when you have a line like the Patriots currently have, it's hard to win on the road. It's hard to go into dome stadiums and play well.
So, Michael, you just ran through some of those red chip offensive lines: Green Bay, Denver, the Rams, also adding in the Indianapolis Colts, the Atlanta Falcons. This is tier two of your top offensive lines in the league. What's the separator between the red chip tier two and the blue chip tier one in terms of the line units you're looking at?
The versatility within the line. Like, I don't think Atlanta is a great pass protection, drop back pass team. You know, I think the versatility to be able to do both really, really at a high level is what separates them. Like, I didn't have Kansas City as a top 10 line, and you'd say, well, they won the Super Bowl. Well, you know, their tackle at right tackle, not very good in Juwan Taylor. The left tackle, they may have to start a rookie at left tackle. I don't know how that's going to be. So their tackle situation lends me to think that it may not work out. So for me, it's about the versatility of the line and the level of excellence in terms of being able to do both run and pass. Green Bay is not a good run blocking line, but they can pass protect.
Okay. And you said earlier as well, the Detroit Lions for you, the best offensive line in the league right now. I don't think you're going to find any disagreement there where they sit. Who else is on your blue chip O-lines?
Well, I mean, I think Philly, even though they lost Kelsey, I still think Philly's really good. Their tackle situation with Lane Johnson and Jordan Mulata are very good. Minnesota's a very good young offensive line with Darrishaw and O'Neal at tackle. They're really improved. I think Cleveland is the one team that you have to kind of double check on, because their offensive line can be really good. But unfortunately, you know, they've had to overcome some injuries. You know, Willis is really one of the better left tackles in football, but he just got put off a PUP. And Jake Conklin, who they signed from Tennessee, who's a very good player, Jack Conklin, excuse me, you know, he just came off a PUP. Those two tackles are good when they're healthy.
And also, like, another layer to the Browns that we've talked about is, will that unit potentially take a step back without Bill Callahan, who left to take a job coaching at the Tennessee Titans with his son? Also, I mean, let's say this offensive line is great and they continue to play at a blue chip type level altogether and they're healthy. Are they going to be enough to help Deshaun Watson? Or if you have a quarterback that's struggling in the back end, does it just not even make that big of a difference?
Well, I mean, look, Deshaun averaged in his career, he's averaged 6.5 yards per attempt throwing the ball down the field in Cleveland. You know, when he was at his height of his career, he was in the 8.3 area. I mean, he's 2 yards per attempt less than he was in Houston. Mm-hmm. Why is that? I don't know. There's a lot of rust on that body. He's only started 12 games for the Browns. You know, 1 year because of the suspension, the next year because of the injury. He's the unknown. I mean, the Browns could easily have a good team with no quarterback. I mean, the fact that here's what makes it so maddening about when you're studying the Browns. They fired Alex Van Pelt because they said the offense wasn't good enough under his regime with Deshaun, but it was really good enough with Flacco. Yeah. So is it Deshaun or is it the scheme? Which one is it? They're saying it's the scheme. Now, Van Pelt gets to run the Patriots however he wants to run them, but the reality of it is I think at the end of the day, Watson's got to prove he can handle the scheme.
Now, listen, we'll get to the bad offensive lines in a second, but I do have one more question here for the good offensive lines, because I have a similar question with the Minnesota Vikings. Later on in the show, we're going to talk through your bottom five quarterback rooms in the National Football League. And the Minnesota Vikings are a team that has an awesome offensive line on paper, should be really good. But this might be a little spoiler for later, but the Vikings are on your list of teams with tough quarterback rooms, especially now that J.J. McCarthy has a torn meniscus and he's not going to be a part of that room anymore. How does that impact the Vikings?
Well, I think, look, their line's really good. They got tremendous assets. A second-round pick at O'Neal in their line. Darrishaw's a one. Bradbury's a one. Ed Ingram's a two. Blake Brendel's a six. I mean, they put their money where their mouth is. But here's where I think the problem in the quarterback room is, and I've said this today on McAfee, and I'll say it today here on our show. They're looking to replace Nick Mullins. Nick Mullins isn't good enough, and they know it. So is Mike White, who just got released by Miami, better than Nick Mullins? Who's the quarterback going to come in to replace Nick Mullins? Because they know, keep Jaren Hall out of the conversation. They need a better player than Nick Mullins because they can't count that Darnold, A, is going to stay healthy and perform at a high level.
Yeah, they really thought they were going to have something going with Sam Darnold as a bridge quarterback, introduce their young stud quarterback that they took in the first round of the draft in J.J. McCarthy, and the injury has certainly derailed that plan. You have to have a contingency plan for Sam Darnold, no doubt about it. Now, Michael, as we talk about some, you know, rough offensive lines, you said, listening to you and Matt Eumanns on the GM Shuffle podcast earlier this week, a great comment, quote, if you don't have a blue chip line, you're going to have trouble on the road. Can you explain that a little bit more and some teams that people should be wary of betting this season?
Well, I mean, bad offensive lines don't travel. And here's why. What's the hardest thing to overcome when you play on the road? The crowd noise. The start of the game. What's the number one advantage the offense has in football? The crowd, the snap count. They know they get off the ball first, technically. But when you don't have a good line and they're playing on the road and you lose that advantage of getting off the ball first because of the crowd noise, now all of a sudden it's a harder battle. It's why Detroit can win on the road. It's why Detroit goes into Levi Stadium and executes the hell out of the game plan. It was not a problem. It's why, you know, Green Bay went and pass protected against Dallas in a playoff game. It's why Kansas City was able to play effectively last year when they had to win all those road games, because they were able to match the level of play with their offensive line, and Mahomes can do some incredible things on the move. So that's the issue. When you have a bad team like the Patriots, they've got to go to Cincinnati to open the season up, right? Now it's a problem.
Yeah.
Because they got the noise behind them. The crowd's going to be electric. They're going to have to handle it. There's not a lot of communication. The right guard's not played next to the right tackle for enough reps. Things start to fall apart. And when that happens, one mistake. I mean, they couldn't handle a simple TE stunt in New England last week against the backups for the Washington Commanders.
Well, Michael, that's what I'm thinking. That's a preseason crowd against a second-string defensive line from one of the worst teams in the NFL. Now you're going to have to go into a tough road environment in the regular season and perform. Yeah, that's a big ask. Now, we've talked at length about the Patriots' bad offensive line, the Giants' bad offensive line. Who are some other teams that come to mind as teams worth fading on the road when it comes to that unit?
Well, I think when you look at it, you know, when you have these younger teams that kind of getting started, Seattle's offensive line last year was not very good. Two tackles, but Lucas was out and so was Cross. So you're hoping that they come back. I think Arizona's line is not very good. Now they've got to hit with some of their draft picks, right? You know, they have to be able, Johnson's got to come through for him. The kid they took in the first round last year, he's got to come through for him. And Jonah Williams has got to come through. But Jonah Williams has not been good enough when he was playing in Cincinnati. That's the big issue. So you got Paris Johnson, Jonah Williams, and then you've got a bunch of guys inside. They just re-signed Ferholt to be the starting center for a couple of years. They got him off of Cleveland's team. So they would be one of the teams I would look at and say, oh, the Giants is another one. I mean, the Giants, oh, yeah. I don't care what they said in preseason. This offensive line is not good enough.
Michael.
I mean, if they're going to start Evan Neal at right tackle, which they won't do, Brian Daboll's too smart to do that.
That goes without saying. Like, everyone already knows that about the Giants. We will be right back. What's on Michael's mind next as the NFL rosters get cut down to final 53 today?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're back rolling, rocking and rolling on a Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Michael out at his office in Jersey. I'm live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. We are talking quarterbacks here. Earlier this month, Michael and Femi, which we're going to miss Femi so much, by the way. I haven't had an opportunity to say that on the program, but congrats to him and his new opportunity with BetQL. But we miss him so much here on the Lombardi Line and the GM Shuffle family. But you two, when you were on the program earlier this month, broke down the top five quarterback rooms in the NFL. Kansas City, Cleveland, Houston, Cincinnati, and Miami. Today, we're going to do the complete opposite of that. And we're going to look at the quarterback rooms that we anticipate struggling the most, don't have depth, all of those things, which from top to bottom, we're going to start at 28 and then work our way down to 32 for the bottom five quarterback rooms. Who do you have at 28, Michael?
Well, I have New England at 28. I mean, you could these five, you could throw them in a hat and jump them up because I'm not sure any of them are, you know, when you're looking for a quarterback, you're looking out. New England's 28 because Drake May offers some sense of hope, you know, based on what he's done this preseason. His accuracy obviously needs to improve, his awareness, playing, all those things. But, you know, you can see why he was the third pick in the draft. He's big, he's strong, he can run. He seems like a great kid. He's going to work hard. That's a good call there. Tennessee, look, you know, there's certain teams you agree with on their player personnel beliefs, and then there's certain teams you don't. And I would say Tennessee's in that I don't. I don't see the Will Levis thing. I really don't. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm going to be wrong, and I'll admit it. I've been wrong before, but I just don't see him. I think he's mechanical. I think he's robotic in how he plays. I think he sprays the ball way too much to really feel any sense of confidence that he's going to make great throws. So, and this quarterback room, really, I mean, he's got Mason Rudolph in there, and then they have Malik Willis. So I don't know if they have a quarterback. Now, they're going down the Will Levis road. They're going all the way down. They're going to the dead end. And that may prove to be the end of this regime here, Rand Carthon, because if he's wrong on this, he's going to need a quarterback.
Michael, real quickly, before we move on that list,
yeah.
He also is completely tied for the rest of his life, not only to them, but to apparently Hellman's Mayo. I don't know. Did you see a couple weeks ago?
I heard.
The cologne. He has a Hellman's Mayo cologne commercial. Of course, famous in college for putting mayo in his coffee. It never ends. Anyways, I got sidetracked. Move on.
Okay. All right. Let's go to three. The Raiders. When you have two of something, you have nothing.
Yep.
Look, the Raiders wanted to draft Michael Penix. I think that's clear. They wanted to try to manipulate the draft to get Daniels. That's clear. They got neither of them. They signed Gardner Minshew without a lot of people in the building know that they did sign him. I just don't see this being a long-term solution. The Raiders quarterback room, whether they start O'Connell or they start Minshew, they don't have a quarterback. And that's a problem. And they've got a good enough defense, but eventually teams are going to play them a certain way. That it's their quarterback's going to have to show up and not make mistakes. And I don't think either quarterback can do that.
Do you? And I mean, we talked about it yesterday. Jarrett Stidham, you said, probably was a mistake for the Raiders to let him go, just because this is top of mind for me. What do you think ends up happening with Jarrett Stidham? Because it's weird to see somebody lose a quarterback job and still have them be saying verbally, outwardly, I think I'm a starting quarterback in this league. I feel like that makes for a little bit of an awkward situation in the room.
Well, I mean, look, he went and signed with Denver. The Raiders made their mistakes on this. There's no question. They should have signed him immediately, but they didn't. They kind of played around with it and didn't do what they needed to do. But I would say this. I think to me, you know, Stidham's not going to – I don't think Sean's just going to let Stidham out there. I think if somebody calls him, because he knows that the Raiders would probably go after him. So Sean's going to hold on to him. He's got another year of his contract. Why not?
No. Raiders, of course, opening the season with the Chargers. Number 31 of 32, worst quarterback rooms in the league. You've put, who?
The Minnesota Vikings. I mean, really, Sam Darnold, and we got Nick Mullins. Can it get worse than that? I mean, Darnold,
yeah.
Okay. But Nick Mullins is the backup. Jared Hall is the third. I'm not liking that room at all. You know, now the only good thing about this room, unlike the Raider room, is there's really not a cap money. The Raiders room doesn't have much cap money. All these teams here have very little cap money in their quarterback room, except for, without further ado, the worst quarterback room in the league, the New York Football Giants, who allocate 19% of their cap to the quarterback. And their quarterbacks aren't good. So when you're given 19% and you have the 32nd back quarterback room, what does that tell you about your team?
Michael, I can't help but giggling here real quickly, just because as you were talking about the Vikings, you're like, can it get any worse? Well, clearly it has, because they're 31 of 32 and you have the Giants here dead on about the impact on the cap for sure. But then you go out and you get Drew Lock to bring him in to be your backup because you do have a quarterback in Daniel Jones who has had issues, who has injury history, significant injury history in the recent past. Then he gets injured. So then you're left with Tommy DeVito.
I mean, it goes from bad to worse. And then the fact is, you didn't even mention it. They're paying Daniel Jones $40 million. Like, you don't pay somebody $40 million and think you still have a need. You're paying $40 million to solve a need. You're not paying $40 million to get a need. That's what I don't get. I love it today. Who said it today? I was doing Tony Rizzo's show in Cleveland, and he said, yeah, we have a caller calls in, said Lombardi hates the Giants. Can I explain? I don't hate the Giants, but when you're 7-31 against the two best teams you have to beat, how do you love the Giants if you're a fan? Like, how do you think that that's good? We have a scoreboard in the National Football League. I know this is a shocker to most fans. A scoreboard, and it has a one-loss record attached to it. This is a horrendous team. They've got a 36% win percentage. What do you want me to do? Tell you they're great? Tell you they're going to be fine? Everything's perfect? I mean, seriously, we're a betting network. You want to bet on Daniel Jones?
Michael, I genuinely believe that Giants fans see that season 2 years ago in Brian Daboll's first year as a head coach, and they think that that was not a fluke, that that was real, and that's who this team is and what they're going to be, and they're just going to build on it. Yet we have the evidentiary support that that's not the case, and they just can't wrap their heads around it.
No, they can't. And I think, to me, what happens is, Stormy, is people fall in love with a little success. That year, they didn't beat anybody. They couldn't come close. They couldn't come close to beating the Cowboys. They couldn't come close to beating the Eagles. I mean, they couldn't. So I don't understand it. Like, you get measured by beating good teams. You don't get measured by barely beating the Houston Texans because Davis Mills turns the ball over on every possession in the second half. Like, come on now.
And that's why two of my bets in the guide, which are available now when you are a VSiN Pro subscriber, VSiN.com/subscribe. We have the original guide from the offseason and then a refreshed guide that came out today with the preseason now in the past, getting you set for week one and some additional futures, things that all of our hosts and handicappers have added in pocket. I have added the Giants to be the worst offense in the National Football League this year. It's 10-1 proposition. And in the previous edition of the guide, I have Daniel Jones under 16.5 touchdown passes, basically just betting on him to do what he has done every season since his rookie year. But anyways, you know, neither here nor there.
Facts.
But yeah, no point in that, Michael. But I had one more follow-up question here real quickly about the Minnesota Vikings. Where do you think that their quarterback room would have ranked had J.J. McCarthy not gotten injured? Would they still be in this bottom five?
I think they'd probably be 27th or 28th, and New England would move down.
Okay.
You know, because we don't know about J.J. McCarthy yet. We're not sure. We haven't seen that yet. Now, I didn't put the Washington Commanders on there because I think with Mariota has played, and I think Daniels will be a good player. I think they would be, you know, all the rookie, like Denver would be probably right where New England is, it would go, you know, all the rookie quarterbacks who are starting. That would be the list. I mean, look, I don't think the Colts quarterback room is great, but they got Flacco. Flacco threw for 1,600 yards last year. You want to dismiss that? It was better than Watson.
I think that's good, too, that you're not throwing in a lot of these rookie quarterbacks. Similarly, how we had the Mike Sando article that came out earlier from The Athletic listing the tiers of starting quarterbacks in the NFL right now. He didn't include the rookie quarterbacks because we just don't know yet. You need to give them at least a season to get some sense of a picture for what this player is going to be in the NFL.
No question. And just have some patience. Look, you know, I think we know who Daniel Jones is, right? We kind of have a feel for Sam Darnold. They'll make him look better. There's no question he'll look better. But, you know, we kind of know some of these teams. We know who Nick Mullins is for sure. I mean, Nick Mullins can't win a game. He's having a hard time winning a game. So I think, to me, the unknown is you have to be patient.
For those who have forgotten, by the way, last year in 6 appearances for Daniel Jones prior to the season-ending injury, 2 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 67% completion percentage. Just throwing that out there. But again, Why deal in facts, Michael? We're going to hit the break. When we come back, we're going to discuss a few more of these additional futures bets, ways that we want to look at the season now that the preseason is in the rear view. VSiN.com senior editor Zach Cohen is going to drop by and drop some knowledge. Don't go anywhere.